The Power of Group Consciousness. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, bringing you the thought for today, the power of group consciousness. Now, what is the power of group consciousness? We talked a while back about the astronauts who were out in outer space, and their ship just would not come down. NASA couldn't bring it down, the astronauts couldn't bring it down, no one could bring it down. And they felt very sad about that, of course. I mean, they're sort of stuck up there. How do you come home? So, one radio announcer said, let's pray. Let's just unite as the world and see the astronauts landing in their perfect place. And so he spoke his word on the radio, and other radio stations and radio announcers across the world picked it up, and television stations and everything. And pretty soon everyone was saying, the astronauts are landing in their perfect place now. And at the appointed time when they were supposed to come down, the ship came down in its appointed place in perfect shape. Landed in the ocean, the astronauts were picked up, and they could find nothing wrong with the controls in the ship. NASA could find nothing wrong with its controls, and it was as though there never had been a problem. Sort of like a spiritual healing, wasn't it? Mm. Now, would you say that this was the united efforts of people all around the world? No, I would say it was the effort of one individual. The united people around the world could easily have spoken their word and brought these things about, that's true. But that's not the way it works. It only takes one person to believe one thing or another. And how much conviction do they have toward whatever they want to believe? Now let's just use the astronauts. Who do you think might have had the most beautiful conviction that the ship would land properly? The astronauts who were in the spaceship? The people at NASA? The people in NASA were scientists. They were working on principle. They were working on rules and regulations. The men aboard the spaceship were so emotionally involved in this, they probably couldn't think straight about praying at a time like that. They were just working on those controls. They were manipulating the controls. They were trying to figure out what's wrong. They may have had a positive thought, true, about that. But I'm sure that somewhere on the Earth, who knows, it might not have even been anyone related to the astronauts or to the program. It might have been some little boy sitting in his chair, and his mother says, the astronauts are stuck up in outer space. And he says, Mommy, they're coming home now. They're home now. With such innocence and such conviction and such belief, I quite imagine that that might have been how it was brought into being as a finalization. Now, perhaps it was a little girl. Perhaps it was the mother of one of the astronauts, or maybe just a mother, period, who felt close to these people. Now, you see, it doesn't have to be some tremendously emotional, dynamically impactful thing, like when Lancelot spoke his word for the man that he had bested in the jousting. It does not have to be such an emotional thing. Actually, Lancelot was not, what would you say, emotionally out of it. He was just in it. Mm-hmm. He said, he did not say to the man, remember this now, remember this. He did not say to the man, don't die.
Mm-hmm. Please live. Get up.
He said, live. Live. Please live. Live. And this is his conviction. He saw this man living. He saw this man regardless of the fact that they said he was dead. They saw him living. They saw him whole and perfect. Now, medical science might come along and say he just got the wind knocked out of him, you know, and he was just gone for a moment. And many other things may be said, but it doesn't matter. What was the end result?
He lived.
He lived. And what was the end result for Lancelot? It changed his whole world. You see, that moment, Lancelot was born into love. He was born into compassion. He was born into humanism. He was born into the desire to love and be loved. Up to that time, his love for himself was sufficient. His pride in himself was sufficient. His confidence in himself, his self-worth was sufficient. And that's the way it must always be with people. But the moment Lancelot spoke his word for this man, to speak health for him, wholeness for him, Lancelot stopped being a spiritual master. And he started to be a human master. Now, though he had been in chivalrous activities, that was just part of the game in those days. He himself was a dedicated, spiritually illumined being. He was so pure and so fabulous that everyone hated him. They hated him because he represented the finest that each could be. They didn't really hate him, they like to trip people who are up on pedestals, whether they're self-imposed pedestals or whether the pedestal is given to them righteously. But people like to trip people who are up on pedestals. And so Lancelot was in for a tripping. And he didn't trip, but he did fall into the human aspect of it. You might say he was at the peak. And you fall this way, and you fall into your spiritual reality. You fall this way, and you fall into your human reality. Both are excellent. And as he fell into his human reality, he took on compassion. He took on love, the need to give and to receive love. He took on the ability, for the first time, to love something outside of himself. You understand that? Before that, he could only love himself. And we look at that and we say, that is not good, that is unhealthy, that is all sorts of stuff. Well, have we ever really loved ourselves? Have we ever really loved ourselves from the highest and the greatest and the most spiritually impactful thing? Here the crowd stood around this man that Lancelot had bested. And they looked at him. And then he said, oh, is he dead? Is he dead? And the queen herself said, he's dead. And she realized what she had done. And the king himself was used to death, but you never get used to death. And he said, he knew how it came about. He knew why it came about. And he knew it had to be Lancelot, because Lancelot went through all of these things with all the others untouched. And then, the striking blow, and it took one man, Lancelot, to speak his word of purity to bring this man out of his sleep. You see, that's the same compassion that Jesus used when he raised the dead. He just said, they only sleep. He did not accept that they were gone. Lancelot perhaps felt a little bit that he had done something improper. And so he was unhappy in that respect. But in the respect of his purity and his nobility and his ability to say, live and have the man live, such is how one individual somewhere in the universe spoke their word with such conviction that they won the sweepstakes, that the astronauts came down. Here, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people who put the money in so you can have a big money to win. These thousands of people putting money into the sweepstakes, and one person wins. One person walks home with the prize. And sometimes that one person doesn't even walk home with the prize because they don't even think about it. It's their ticket and they forgot to look. But you see, when you win, that person who won the sweepstakes and didn't remember to look at the ticket won more than the sweepstakes. That person won non-attachment and non-possession. That person won the greatest gift that they could ever have. And it's too bad if they ever did contact that person and tell them, finally they did win, you know. Because they had something that was intangible. They didn't know it. They had something that was intangible that was theirs. They won and they didn't even care. They didn't even look at their ticket to see if they did. And the woman, the man, the child who spoke his word, their word for the astronauts, they probably didn't even follow up on the newspaper to see if they actually came down.
Come!
It's done. They don't have to check. They don't have to say, are you okay now? Do you feel better now? When can you come home from the hospital? You know, when's this, when's that, you know? You see, spiritual healing, working on spiritual principles, is such a wonderful thing. But we feel that the power of group consciousness is so great. Well, the power, only benefit of the power of group consciousness is that you can tell the same story to many people at the same time, and then have those who wish to act upon it act, and those who don't wish to act upon it, they don't have to act upon it. See, it's a big issue. It's a very big issue. Many seek out spiritual paths, but there are few who are ready to walk it. Few who are ready to walk it because they say, oh, I want the fun and games of life. Well, hey, you can have the fun and games of life. But I must correct myself here. You cannot have the fun and games of life. Because if you think the fun and games of life are separate from your spiritual path, you cannot have them. Mm-hmm. If you think that the fun and games of life are just as much on the spiritual path as the spiritual path is, then it is. You see, the reason that we are afraid of fun and games is because we think that we don't deserve them. We think that they are not right, they're not good. As Patricia was saying, she's going to do this funeral. I was thinking of saying to her, I did say to her, it's graduation time for the lady. And I was going to say to her, now wear your brightest gown. Don't wear the somber black gown. Wear your brightest, most gold, most glorious gown that will let you be there as she takes off for this next adventure. You see, we want to wear the black gowns because it represents tradition. Black, well, isn't it interesting? Ellen, what does the judge wear?
Black.
Yeah. Black. And what does a clergyman sometimes wear? Black. But what do the New Thought clergymen wear? Purple, white, pink, blue, you name it. They have no, they're colorblind. But they're colorblind only because we're so used to seeing them in black. And how joyous. I go give lectures around the world. I have my sandals, my short pants on. And people say, my God, what is this? And after I'm talking for a moment or two, they say, my God, wonderful. So, group consciousness is a wonderful thing. Group consciousness is a powerful thing. It's a wonderful way to reach many people at once. But this is not to belittle anything here now. But you look at Billy Graham talking to 5,000 at one crack in the Shriner Auditorium, which he does very well. I mean, he really draws the crowd. He knows his business. And of course, we'll never know. You cannot say how many of those people were spiritually uplifted. But instead of being jealous, as is the possibility there, say, Billy Graham, every person you speak to is uplifted in that, on their spiritual path. Now, why not? As Jesus said, if they're with us, they're not against us. So we can well begin to recognize that the evangelistic ministers who do such a rip-snorting job, and these people who reach out to great numbers of people, I would like it that every president or every major person who speaks would have some tiny little essence of quality in whatever they're doing, that people would listen to it and be uplifted by it. Now, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt gave the fireside chats. He sat by the fire in his beautiful estate, and he spoke to the public every evening. He spent 10 or 15 minutes speaking to them every evening, his fireside chats. He spoke to them of confidence in the country. He spoke to them of the expectation of abundance and welfare. Not welfare, but you know, a beneficial country. And people listened to him. They sat around their radios as though they had some giant television going on there. And they listened, and the women sat there nodding yes, and the men said, good man. Yeah, good man. He will do well. And he did. And term after term he continued, because he took the time every day not only to do the work that he had to do as the president, but he took the time to make the people feel comfortable with the world that he was giving them. And that's a wonderful thing to do. Make the people feel comfortable with the world that you are serving them en broche. Yeah. Each one of us will come to realize that it's not the power of group consciousness, however grand and glorious and wonderful it is to have the group shout hallelujah, but it's for the fulfillment of your own highest and best. This is the ideal. This is the wonderment. There now is peace on earth, and it began with me. Let us never forget our role, and how wonderful and how important it is. I love you.